when they're working. WPC is a unique concept within the Parkinson's world, and the man who's principally responsible for bringing it to fruition is Dr. Stanley Farn, who co-chaired the first two congresses in Washington. Now, I'm going to introduce you Dr. Serge Jaborski and Dr. John Stossel, who are both co-chairing this meeting. But before I give the floor to them, I want to tell you why I'm here and why this Congress is so important to me and other people with Parkinson's. Whenever I am asked how we're going to find a cure for Parkinson's, my response is teamwork. Because if we all combine as a team and there was better communication between patient, doctor, between scientist and pharmaceutical company, between clinician and regulatory bodies, and between you, the media, and those in power, maybe the doctors could better treat the individual nature of this condition. Maybe the balance of science and regulatory... Maybe the balance of science and commercial reality could be improved, allowing more investment in the area. Maybe the regulators could fast-track the most promising advances, and maybe governments would invest more heavily in Parkinson's now and ultimately save billions on the future costs of care of a condition for which the prevalence worldwide is set to double in the year 2030. And it's those two things, communication and teamwork, that makes the World Parkinson's Congress the most important meeting, not only for those who make their living out of treating Parkinson's, but also for those who make the best of their lives out of having Parkinson's. No other Parkinson's Congress brings the entire Parkinson's community together and gives such a huge opportunity for cross-fertilisation of ideas, inspiration and innovation. This is a conference shaped by both science and society. Yes, it is about medicine, but it's also about me and others like me. People with Parkinson's have been allowed to play as much of a role in the content of this meeting as the scientists, so that the programme that we have covers the full spectrum of understanding this disease, from the basic fundamentals of the condition, which is a session going on right now, to the most cutting scientific discoveries. It's all here at the World Parkinson Congress. So why is WPC so especially important for people living with Parkinson's? Three reasons, I think. Firstly, it gives us the opportunity to meet other people living with Parkinson's, to learn from their experiences, to meet new friends and to pool our opinions so that our collective voice can be an influential force in shaping progress. Secondly, it provides a platform for us to interact with other stakeholders in the Parkinson's world. I always feel incredibly humbled by coming to WPC, knowing that most of the people here are all committed to making me feel better. And the opportunity to meet these people face to face is always incredibly rewarding. And hopefully this is a two-way thing. And finally, legacy. The World Parkinson Congress is not just about this week. It's about what happens afterwards. As a direct result of the last conference in Glasgow, I've personally been involved in numerous exciting initiatives which have brought greater urgency, greater accuracy, and greater relevance to the future treatment of Parkinson's. So this Congress means a lot to us. This is where the movers and shakers of Parkinson's meet the movers and shakers with Parkinson's. After the Glasgow conference in 2010, I received letters from people with the condition saying that the experience they had changed their lives for the better, had given them hope, and had given them a renewed sense of purpose. And many of these people became ambassadors for this Congress and spread the word, making this the biggest and best WPC yet. With that, I'd like to hand over to John or Stan.
Thanks, Stan. I'm
sorry, I came late. What's the procedure here? Overview of WPC, thank you. As you know, World Parkinson Congress, this is the third one. Why did we form it? The idea came, you'll hear about this in the opening ceremony tonight if you're coming. If not, I'll briefly say that the idea came from in 2003 from the then director of the National Institutes of Health, and in Washington, D.C., who suggested the idea. I wasn't at that meeting. The executive director of the Parkinson's Disease Foundation was there. He came back to New York, and he mentioned it to me, and I thought that was a great idea. Too bad I didn't think of it, but let's execute it. Let's form a nonprofit organization that would be tax exempt and be the sponsoring organization, and put together the doctors, the scientists, the people who have Parkinson's, the nurses, the physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, family members, care provider, anybody interested in Parkinson's should come together. And that was planning on it. And in 2004, we got the tax-exempt organization going. We picked a board of trustees for this foundation, and then we initiated the committees to proceed. We hired Elizabeth Pollard, you'll hear about that tonight too, to go to the opening ceremony, and has been our executive director ever since. And we've run this meeting. The first one was in 2006. It was a short time between 2004 when we got the tax-exempt organization approved until February 2006. It was the President's weekend holiday in the United States. Washington, D.C., nothing was going on in Congress. The hotel rooms were empty, and the convention center in Washington was available, and we grabbed it. We got a discount rate. We were able to meet our financial needs, and we had over 3,000 people come. About a third were people with Parkinson's, or in other words, lay people without Parkinson's. The others were scientists or clinicians. And then we planned the next one. That was Glasgow, Scotland. That was 2010, and now we have the one here in 2013. Again, we have over 3,000 people at each one of these, and what we have found is that people come away from these learning about Parkinson's disease, meeting other people, coming up with new ideas, and as a way for us clinician scientists and basic scientists to meet all the other people involved with Parkinson's, particularly the people who have Parkinson's. We look at this as their meeting. It's not just our meeting. The people with Parkinson's are engaged in the planning process and the meeting process and the chairing the committees and participating in all the committees. Involved from beginning to the end throughout the entire Congress. And more people with Parkinson's are coming to these meetings. At this meeting, about two-thirds of all the people attending have either the disease or have relatives or a care provider of the people with the disease. So we know that this is very important to everybody. And so what we're going to do is educate them, what we call day zero, which is today, because the opening ceremony isn't until tonight. There are three parallel sessions, one for dedicated to instructing people with Parkinson's about the fundamentals of the disease itself. Another one where all the allied health professionals, physical therapists, occupational therapists, so forth, nurses, all get together in interdisciplinary teams of helping and providing care for people with Parkinson's. And the third one, more for the clinical physician taking care of people with Parkinson's, hearing about the latest drugs and surgery from sponsors who put together this symposium to help train the doctors about these new agents. So it's a learning process, and hopefully by the end of the meeting after day three, everybody will come away knowing a lot more than when they arrived, and at the end also come up with some new ideas, hopefully new ideas for research, and get people involved. People who have Parkinson's should be involved. It's their illness. It's part of them. It's not going to go away. If they don't take care of their disease, the disease is going to take care of them. And so the person with Parkinson's has to be proactive, energetic. Don't let the disease defeat that person. And so I hope this type of a Congress will inspire that in her patients, and they'll be better for it, and they'll have a healthier, higher quality of life, live longer. And that's part of the goal of this Congress. Glad to take any questions when the time comes.
So So good morning. My name is Serge Obchalowski from Columbia University in New York. And I had the privilege to be the chair of the program committee of the WPC here in Montreal. So before I tell you a little bit about the program and the different main element that comprise this program, let me give you again and reiterate what Dr. Fan has said of the background and basically the mission that we were asked, myself and my colleagues, to deal with in order to put together the program that you can see today. Really, if you think about it, Parkinson's disease, like many other adult onset neurodegenerative disorders, it's made of different actors. And indeed, meetings exist in different forms, whether they're directed or oriented toward patients, researchers, clinicians, caregivers. But often those meetings occurred in isolation, separate from each other, in silo. If you see what is basically the current belief where progress and advance challenges such as Parkinson's disease may emerge from, it's to try to break those silos. This is what you see in academia, where more and more we tend to bet on what's called translational sciences, where basically everyone from different horizons try to speak to each other to try to enrich the mission and the effort of each other. The same, in fact, you can translate or expand to Congress and the problem of Parkinson's disease. What are the different actors? Goes everywhere from the patient to the caregiver to policymakers to advocacy group, basic science clinicians, whether they're academician or in private sector. And so the idea that Dr. Fern implemented in this meeting, and I think that it's exemplified again in Montreal and through the program, has been to make sure that there was a little bit of everything for everyone, so that not only we educate all the different aspects and participants and actors of the Parkinson world through the meeting, but we also offer a platform for them to interact with each other and cross-fertilize whatever is their concern and their mission in life. And so basically, in order to address this challenge, the program committee have thought about different format, because as you can imagine, one size doesn't fit all. And so we have come with different novelty, I would say, or innovation compared to the previous meetings. And I will briefly go through it with you to tell you a little bit what was the philosophy behind that. Not only did we have a great series of colleagues who give their time in, with different expertise to identify critical topics and matters, but also we orchestrated or organized those topics in different format. The days during the next 3 days will always start what we call the hot topics. That it's a platform basically where we offer our younger colleague who come to the meetings to experience what is it to present in front of a public, to deliver their message of research, clinical or basic, in a manner that basically will be interesting and informative for the audience, but also for them to train as becoming, growing in this community and one day becoming the leader of this field. Follow with that is the plenary sessions that we basically organize in exactly to fulfill and faithfully so the translational nature with specific topics, not all of them, but selected topics going from basic research all the way up to Parkinsonian, person with Parkinson concern and interest in that questions. We have parallel sessions that will be more specialized, and we have labeled in the program to indicate the level of, I would say, idiosyncratic or specificity of the sessions. And then we thought that it was very important at the end of the day, because there is so much going on at the same time that no one can really attend everything, and yet there are very important things that will be discussed. So we'll have experts at the end of the day through the wrap-up session that will have as a mission to digest everything that has been said during the day, will extract the most salient points and basically present that to you in an abbreviated version, but by stressing really the important points of every day. some patient also will feel, or some expert even, will feel more comfortable in a more intimate atmosphere to discuss issues or concern with an expert, whether the expert is a person with Parkinson, an advocacy group representative, or a researcher, an academician. We have this year also implemented, and I hope that it will be successful, a format of roundtable where basically specific topic will be selected. People will sign to attend those roundtable and will be able to have a conversation like they will have in their living room, basically, with an expert on a topic that they can be interested in. So that, in brief, basically what the program is made of. As you can see, there is a little bit of everything. It's eclectic, but yet with the mission to really find ways to bring together people that are different actor, key actor of the field of Parkinson's disease, and I will be happy to answer any question later on. Thank you.
I think it's back to me again. So, the media, what have we got for you? There's so much to tell you about what's going on. I, for one, won't be standing still at this Congress, but those of you in the room probably surmised that already. Serge has already taken you through the basic program of Congress, but what else is going on? Well, later on today, we have a fantastic opening ceremony in the main conference hall where we'll be royally entertained by local dignitaries and entertainment acts, together with a welcome address from Bob Kuhn, a Canadian who has Parkinson's and is also the owner of the WPC mascot, Parky the Raccoon. After this, the exhibit hall will open and you will find everything you could wish for in the Parkinson's world. If it's people with the condition you want, I strongly advise you to come to the Parkinson's Advocates and Experts booth, which will be awash with people moving in mysterious ways, and chocolate as well, if that helps your decision-making process. Then throughout the Congress, there are various things on offer. You can visit the new renewal room, which is an area which people with Parkinson's can relax, perhaps learn about dancing, singing, drumming, drawing, Tai Chi, yoga and Pilates. You can also learn about WPC Buddies program, which has been a successful initiative jointly run by WPC and Parkinson's Society Canada, and has basically allowed people attending from overseas to pair up with Canadian counterparts. And this has enabled many people who wouldn't otherwise be here to attend the Congress. Of course, there are all the usual conference posters and poster tours, as well as results of the fantastic video competition, the winner of which will be announced tonight at the opening ceremony, I think. And the runners-up will be shown along with some inspiring stories of living with Parkinson's at the Creativity and PD area in the main exhibit hall. The quality of the videos and some of the stories they told were particularly amazing this year, and I would strongly recommend you watching a few. For those of you who don't know, there is a media room next door for you to use and to send your stories back to the organisations you work for, and this will be staffed every day from 7:30 till 6 p.m. There will be volunteers available to answer your questions and seek out any particular people you might like to interview at this Congress. You will also find laptops and refreshments in this room. WPC Communications Committee have tried really hard to make your lives as easy as possible so you can report stories from the Congress. Don't forget there is a wrap-up session, as Serge has already mentioned, at the end of each day, which you're able to hear a summary of all that day's sessions. And the last thing I want to say before I hand on to John, is that Parkinson's is a very conspicuous condition. So we just had Parky the Raccoon just parked on the table. Thank you, Christiana. Parkinson's is a very visible condition, and yet it is also inconspicuous in terms of the amount of emphasis, funding and profile it receives. Please help us change that. Let's make Parkinson's more visible in the public eye so that one day both I and everyone with Parkinson's will be able to insert the words used to when we say we have Parkinson's. Thank you.
Thank you. I should just caution you that although Parky may look cute, he's actually a member of the Tea Party. So it's my very pleasant duty to welcome you to Montreal and to Canada and to the Congress. And Montreal is a very special place. It's Canada's second most beautiful city, of course, Vancouver being the first. But more importantly, Montreal is actually the only place in the world where you can get a decent bagel. There is a very special history. We're particularly delighted that this meeting is being held in Montreal because there is a very special history of contributions to the Parkinson's field that have been made by researchers working in Quebec. And we as a country are very proud of that. A number of these contributions are going to be highlighted at a special lecture being delivered tomorrow by Rémi Quirion, who is the head of the Quebec Research Funds. This is not just a health research funding body, but for all scientific research. And he will give a perspective on these magnificent contributions. So I will mention only a couple right now, but I'll also draw your attention to another special lecture that's being delivered on Thursday by Warren Olano, who my colleagues to the right think of as a New Yorker, but I'll actually point out that he's a Canadian and that he was on faculty at McGill University for many years.
And he's still a Canadian, he's not a U.S. citizen. No, he lives in New
York. And what about Ted Cruz?
He's a Canadian.
There have been absolutely massive contributions to the field of the basal ganglia made by Canadians, and in particular by Canadians working in this province. So insights into the anatomy, physiology, and function of the basal ganglia made by Ted Sirks, Poirier, André Parent, Filion, and I will just draw your attention to the fact that Theodore Sirks, who was an early player in the field of catecholamine research, is being honored at a lecture at the Queen Elizabeth in an hour and a quarter. So if you see me running out of here, it is to get over there. This will be the inaugural Ted Sirks lecture, and it's being delivered by our friend and colleague Etienne Hirsch, who is here attending this meeting, a remarkable neuroscientist from France. The contributions to the treatment of basal ganglia disease. André Barbeau worked on both sides of Montreal, on both the French and the English sides, and was one of the first people to use levodopa for the therapy of Parkinson's, and insights into the complications of basal ganglia disease and its treatment, really spearheaded by Paul Bédard in Quebec City, and that challenge later taken up by Thérèse DiPaolo and Pierre Blanchette. So we are enormously proud of all these contributions. Now there will be many other prominent Canadian speakers at this meeting. I think in the interests of time, I'm not going to list all of them, but Andres Lozano, who is one of the world leaders in neurosurgical approaches to the management of Parkinson's disease, his colleague, my colleague, Tony Lang, who's head of neurology at University of Toronto, my close colleague, Matt Farrer, who is a geneticist at the University of British Columbia, and you'll be hearing from Michelle shortly, Michael Schlossmacher from Ottawa, Guy Rouleau, who is the director of the Montreal Neurological Institute, and many, many others who I could list on, but we're very proud, and I should close by saying that you should never think from what Serge had to say that because we're trying to address multiple mandates in this meeting that what you're getting is a watered-down scientific program. Anything but. The quality of the science is extraordinary. I think it competes very favorably against any other major basal ganglia meeting, and yet it has been combined and melded with the approach that Serge spoke about in terms of engaging people with Parkinson's, their caregivers, and other healthcare providers. So we're extremely proud of this and delighted to welcome you all here.
Would you mind introducing Michelle?
Michelle is going to be presenting at the Hot Topics first thing tomorrow morning, I believe. You will hear more from her. She has been working on a genetic project, and in fact, one of the very wonderful things about Parkinson's disease is that we are engaged as an international community, that the advances can only be made when people work with people in other centers. We have had through Michelle and Matt and other collaborations, a very close relationship with people working in Norway. We actually scan more people from Norway than we do from Canada these days, I think, in the PET facility at UBC. And Michelle is going to talk a little bit about some of the genetic research. Do you want the microphone? Or are you speaking or just being introduced?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Michelle from UBC. And we are focusing a lot on the familial forms of Parkinson's disease at our center. And we also do have many research, genetic research going on for case controls participants, not only in Norway, but for the rest of the world. So we are under the umbrella of the GOPD, which is a genetic epidemiology of Parkinson's disease, where we get our international collaborations from. Although this sounds like there's a lot of participants, which we do have a lot of participants, we are still looking and reaching out forward to all the others, new participants, neurologists, and their families, because all results that we have at hand needs to be validated, further validated in more families with PD, and also their family members and new participants. So we hope to be able to reach out to the general public and to make more aware that we are also recruiting more participants for our studies. And this has implication not only for clinical, but also for basic science research. Thank you very much for your introduction.
Thank you. If I could just say one more word, the importance of this to us is so great that I must tell you that people, staff from the genetics lab with which Michelle is associated, some of those staff are actually physically located in our clinic so that when people come in, we can access DNA as painlessly as possible.
Okay. I think we're up for questions. Those on the phone, I think it's star six, is it, to mute your phone?
Yeah.
And star six, if you want to say something again. Are there any questions?
Tom, can I just add one more thing before the questions?
Yeah, sure.
That is to compliment the program committee that Serge heads. At every Congress, because we have people who are basic scientists, those are clinicians, those are with, or let's say, lay people with Parkinson's or the caregivers or families, and then the Allied Health Services, all represented at this Congress, how does the program committee put this together? In order to attract the basic scientists, you have to have a strong basic science program. And just as Dr. Stossel said, we have the strongest basic science. We took the best basic science and put it out there in front of everybody to listen to. The clinical science, similarly. And yet, we also have parallel sessions and information for the people who are not professionals in medicine or science, but let's say have the disease themselves, and they should be able to understand and participate. And so it's all done and in such a way, it took a lot of skill and a lot of people on the Surgeons Committee to put this program together. And I think if you go to the sessions, you will be amazed how good it and has received in the past, how well it has been done, and how well it will be done in this meeting. Okay.
Any questions?
I do bring Vanessa Silver, who is part of the clinic that Professor Stossel is here today with me, but I'm not quite sure if she's allowed to draw blood, so you have to go through a series of stats of ethical forms to fill in before she can do anything. So if you're interested, please visit our website, or you can
I just add a comment that in the last decade, I would say decade and a half, the greatest advances in research in Parkinson's have been in the genetics. We've learned so many more genes when they mutate can cause or actually be a risk factor for causing Parkinson's disease. And therefore, there's a lot of emphasis has been on genetics. And as more genes are discovered, and almost every year there's a new gene being discovered that mutates and causes Parkinson's, this is extremely important. Because once we know how those genes do it, how they cause the neurons to die, particularly the dopamine neurons, but also other neurons in the brain, we might have a way to stop it and treat it. And the drug companies are very eager to do this. So it's so important. Yet at the same time, only about 10 to 15% of all people with Parkinson's have a family history. Now, that doesn't mean just because you have no family history of Parkinson's that you don't have a gene for Parkinson's, because some people who have the gene don't show it, don't manifest it, and yet they pass it on to the next generation. So there's probably a greater number who actually have a genetic factor, but it's probably not the only factor. And there are a lot of people in the environmental health sciences are looking at environmental problems, and certainly pesticides have been pointed out in research to be a factor that might be a risk factor for Parkinson's. Again, not everybody exposed to pesticides will get it. And talking about the contributions from Quebec, André Barbeau was one of the first to look at, right here in the Quebec area, in the farming district around Montreal, the incidence of Parkinson's disease related to the use of pesticides. He was one of the pioneers in this, so another contribution from the great province of Quebec. But at any rate, all I'm trying to say, there's many more probably factors that we don't even know about. So what you do, you know, the person who's lost their key somewhere, but they look under the lamp post, because that's where the light is. You look for genetics is the light right now. We can do genetics. We don't know exactly where else to look for causes, but we're going to get there eventually someday. But it's probably a combination, not just gene alone. Maybe some people gene alone, but most of the other genes we're inheriting are probably contributing in some way, but by themselves wouldn't do it. Maybe it's a combination of genes.
Okay. Thank you very much. No more questions?
Thank you. I just want to thank everybody for coming. I'd like to thank Tom, John, Serge, and Stan for doing such a terrific job this morning. I'd like to remind you that we'll be here again tomorrow morning at 11:20. Who will be attending will be John Stanford from the UK, Dr. Roger Barker, Dr. Marie-Francoise Chazelet from the US, talking about recovery of cells, biomarkers, Michael Schlossmacher from Canada, Dr. Virginia Lieb on protein misfolding, and we will introduce our hot talk presenter for the following day, Yanne Fishbane. I want to thank you all for coming, and if you have any further questions or want to schedule any interviews, the media room is right next door in 523B. Thanks so much to our panel, and Stan, a special thanks for leaping off the stage and coming here. John, I hope you make your meeting in time.
It wasn't on my list, but I had it on my Palm Pilot.